I was going to say eligible for conception, but in a fertile, right? That sounds like a thesaurus trying to tell you how to conceive.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes that we are exploring. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it, that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/DE Legacy. See you there. Did you know that the quality of life and health that your grandchildren will experience actually starts in the eggs, the preconceived eggs that you are carrying around in your body? The choices that you make now, the exposures that you have had throughout your lifetime will actually impact the quality of health of your grandchildren. This is incredible knowledge. This shows you how far medicine has gone, but it also shows you the tremendous amount of responsibility that we as women are walking around with every single day before we conceive. And once we conceive, that whole responsibility thing changes completely again. The conversation around fertility is not something we have spoken about yet on the Entrepology Podcast, but I think it's important. I think it's important for women who are ambitious to have an understanding of how their actions and their stress impact their fertility, for us to be able to have a really frank conversation about the choices and decisions that we need to make if we really want to work towards having it all. My guest today is Dr. Jodi Peacock. She is a friend, naturopathic doctor, an entrepreneur. She is a naturopathic doctor at the Root of Health in Toronto. She studied at the University of Guelph. She has been passionate since the time of her graduation as a naturopathic doctor related to women's health. And she is the host of the Canadian Fertility Show, which is coming up in April. I'm really honored to have her here today because she shared her wealth of experience and we had a really open and frank conversations about some of the things that we need to consider as women. What kind of folic acid is in our prenatal vitamin? What type of toxicity testing we should consider before we are looking at fertility? And how we can marry the excellence of naturopathic or functional medicine with what traditional medicine has to offer if you need to walk that route, if you need to have interventions with respect to fertility. I can't think of a better person to have on the show for this discussion. And it is my absolute pleasure to introduce you to Dr. Jodi Peacock. Dr. Jodi Peacock, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you so much, Dr. Walker.
It's such a pleasure having you here this evening. I have known you for a really long time. You're a naturopathic doctor, entrepreneur. You are highly involved in the community of our profession and in general. Tell us a little bit about how you got to this point.
Yeah, so I decided basically while I was in my undergrad that I wanted to pursue a career in naturopathic medicine. And it really just fit with my value system, with how I wanted to be able to educate and treat people. And with being diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome in first year at naturopathic school, that really kind of stemmed my passion for women's health and hormonal health and balancing.
And have you always focused on women's health in your practice?
I did initially spend quite a bit of time focused in sports medicine and athletics, but then, always had an underlying focus in women's health as well. And I would say really over the last 7 or 8 years, it's been a big focus in women's health. Yeah.
And you're a mother. You've got a young family. You know, if we're going to talk about women's health, and we're going to talk about some of the virtues that naturopathic medicine can bring to the table, tell us a little bit about how you actually find balance in your life. Are there some solid staples that you stick to in terms of how you do what you do?
I really do make sure that I have kind of time carved out for family time. So, you know, from generally kind of 5 o'clock once we're home from work until 8 o'clock when kids are in bed, that's all family time. Like, I really try hard not to go on my phone, not to be on my computer during that time. Also on weekends, if as long as I'm not at a conference, I really try to make that, you know, dedicated family time. And then while kids are at school, and then for me, the keeping the exercise in for my sanity is huge. So I'll find, you know, if I go more than 3 or 4 days without some kind of workout or exercise, I start getting really snappy. So I know that has to stay tried and true in my regular routine.
Yeah. Exercise is so key for me. I don't even have to say I'm going to the gym. Like, if I cross that threshold and I haven't gone enough, my family lets me know that it is time for me to, it's time for me to step
out. Off you go, Mom.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it works. So one of the things that I really wanted to get into for this interview with you is really talking about fertility, not necessarily as a problem we need to be reactive to, but as something we get to be proactive towards. And when we talk about women's health, it's really hard. And we've done that on multiple podcasts. We've gotten into it. It's really hard to talk about women's health and not talk about fertility as one of the inevitable outcomes that that we are after. Can we back up a little bit and not talk about fertility reactively, but from a proactive perspective? If we've got young women, we've got busy entrepreneurial women, go-getter women who are engaged in life, and then they're like, oh gosh, like we really need to get on it. What kind of things do women do need to think about?
I mean, that's one of the big reasons that I do focus in kind of fertility and women's health is, I mean, when we look at kind of the current generation of children being born, this is the first generation that's not predicted to have a longer lifespan than their parents. So I think there is a lot of things we can do proactively and preventatively to keep our health up so that our future generation does become healthy again. So big things like just making sure that you're eating, you know, a healthy, real whole foods based diet. Like that's something that, you know, it's coming back around. There's lots of services now that, you know, will deliver home cooked meals to your house. So you don't have to do a lot of fast foods. But I think, you know, as you get busy, that can be something that drops really easily in someone's lifestyle is, okay, well, I don't have time. I'm just going to go buy something already made. So that's a big piece. Also, you know, if you decide in your 30s or 40s that you do want to have kids, you've already got all those things in place. So, you know, a daily meditation practice, doing things that are calming for the system, making sure, you know, you've got that exercise piece in play. So those are all great long-term, not just for general health, but also for your fertility.
Are there specific things that women need to look at? Do they need to be detoxing before they plan a pregnancy? Is there a special diet that they should be on? Should their husbands or partners be doing things? What kind of things should we be looking at from that perspective?
Yeah, I absolutely. There's lots of things you can be doing from that perspective. From a male side, I mean, we've seen sperm parameters drastically drop over the last couple of decades. So, you know, doing things like, I mean, the obvious things like not using recreational drugs and smoking. There's definitely research showing that couples that have less alcohol are more likely to have a healthy baby than couples that aren't. And then again, from a dietary perspective, I don't think there's a one size fits all diet for everyone. But depending on, you know, if you are prone to having more kind of hormonal issues, generally speaking, a diet that's lower glycemic or has less sugars in it or you know, a lot of carbohydrates is going to be helpful. Making sure you're eating kind of a variety of vegetables through the day so you're hitting all the different colors is one thing I like to talk to patients about. There obviously are supplements that some people can incorporate as well, but I think the more you focus on eating, you know, basically good fruits, vegetables, lean proteins, and healthy fats. That's one thing I find a lot of patients really don't get enough healthy fats in their diet. So that's an important piece as well.
What do you consider to be easily accessible healthy fats?
Things like, you know, avocado, coconut oil, a lot of your nuts and seeds are really good and quick, easy ways to get some healthy fats in. Nut butters, things like tahini, those would all be good options for sure.
And so you mentioned male fertility in terms of this decrease in sperm count that we've seen over the last number of years. Why do you think we're seeing that drop?
In my personal opinion, I think it's a big piece related back to the toxicity of, you know, our air, looking at the toxicity in our foods. Because as soon as, you know, oftentimes once you clean that up for patients, you'll see their sperm counts come up dramatically, especially if men are doing anything, you know, particularly toxic, like smoking marijuana is a really big one that I find a lot of doctors don't necessarily talk to their patients about. And especially now in Canada, with it becoming legalized, it really is looking like it's becoming more and more of a free-for-all. That has a huge impact on sperm quality, as does smoking.
Can you comment on marijuana in terms of egg quality and its impact? Are we seeing the same things that we're seeing in men? Because this is a big one. Like, this is, we're having all these conversations right now about medicinal marijuana or regular use marijuana, but you're right. Like, no one is talking about its implications on fertility, and it is a common overlap in terms of age group, users and people looking to start families.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of actual research on marijuana use and egg quality, I haven't seen anything there. The thing that we will find is, in terms of research that happens around fertility, it's very easy to do research on sperm, right? Because it's obviously pretty easy to get a sperm sample from someone. With egg quality, it's much more challenging, because unless a female is doing an IVF cycle, you don't ever actually see what the quality of someone's egg is like. So it is a little bit more challenging to do studies on it, but you know, research will kind of catch up and generally find the same thing for egg quality.
How do you measure egg quality?
Well, basically, I mean, the only way that you can actually measure it is when you do an IVF cycle and they do a retrieval of the oocytes. Then there's metrics that the lab will use to see, you know, basically they'll be graded based on, you know, how well they're replicating their cells, what the DNA integrity looks like.
Okay. And so I'm now worried that all of our people out in listener land are like, oh gosh, like my husband is smoking pot regularly. I'm enjoying a glass of wine. Is there, like, what are some guidelines that we should be looking at? I know I certainly have things that I do with my patients, you know, even 9 months before we're leading into pregnancy. And it's not that we're taking away absolutely everything that they value for fun in their life. But what are some of the benchmarks that people should be thinking about?
Yeah, in terms of alcohol, there's some interesting studies on alcohol in terms of IVF outcomes. And again, when we talk about fertility, most of the research is done in patients that have undergone IVF, because they're an easier group to actually study. But it does look like for women kind of 30 and under, alcohol consumption doesn't have as much impact on egg quality, on pregnancy outcomes. Now, that's assuming that the woman is not binge drinking, which is kind of having more than three drinks in a sitting. Once you get over 30, there was a dramatic difference between women having four or more drinks or less than four drinks in a week. So there I will say, you know, let's try and keep it under that four mark per week. So then again, you don't have to take it away completely, but because sometimes when patients are, you know, going through fertility treatment, they're doing it for months and months. So to not allow someone to have a glass of wine with their girlfriends or something like that is kind of a cruel punishment for them. And then the same in terms of men's sperm health. So there was actually a study that found, you know, if as a couple, both partners were drinking more than four drinks a week, there was a compounded negative effect in terms of there being, you know, a positive pregnancy. So again, same kind of recommendation for the male partner.
So you should alternate your partying weeks.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. Yeah, I think it's funny because you mentioned the under 30 and its impacts on it impacts egg quality and fertility differently. I just think alcohol affects people differently under 30 versus over 30. And I'm sure you probably see something similar in your practice.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think just our general, our body's ability to detoxify and get rid of things as we age becomes more challenging.
There's this simultaneous conversation that happens now when we talk about fertility, where we're like, oh, fertility, oh, IVF, which I kind of feel like it normalizes interventions related to fertility. How many couples are actually having difficulty needing to walk down that route? Because I find most people walk into my office absolutely convinced that's how they're going to have to conceive their children, whereas it's common, but it's not actually the normal way that people are conceiving their kids.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. So the stats in North America right now are approximately 1 in 6 couples does have some issue conceiving. Now, that doesn't mean that 1 in 6 couples has to have an IVF cycle in order to get pregnant, but it does mean kind of, you know, after a year of trying, 1 in 6 couples isn't pregnant.
Where do couples learn about fertility? Like, I've actually had people in my office where, like, I don't even know what time of the month I should be having sex to get pregnant. Like, where should we be learning about this? And I know you've got a big event coming up, so we'll talk about that from a big event. Like, where does the conversation happen?
I mean, a lot of times I think it happens talking to people's friends. You know, hopefully when you do see your doctor, if you're talking about it, you know, it does come up there. There's also lots of great apps that will help you learn how to chart. You know, I have patients that will use a variety of different ones, but I mean, really from a basic understanding of your menstrual cycle. So, you know, whether that's a conversation with your naturopathic doctor or one of your other alternative, you know, health professionals or with your family doctor, all of those professionals should be able to have that conversation with you.
Well, I start charting and drawing in my office with couples. I'm like, okay, well, here's what happens to estrogen and then progesterone. And then I draw this big jumper and you can see their eyes like going back and they're like, ugh, this was grade 9. I'm like, this was grade 9. And I'm not sure about you, but like, this was not what I was thinking about
in grade nine
no. Science. No. So you mentioned charting there. And I think this is actually a really cool thing to talk about. I'm a huge fan of apps for women to start to understand what's happening in their menstrual cycle. I personally like data. Some people don't. But if we're doing charting, I think a lot of people have been accustomed to learning about basal body temperature and following temperature as a way of understanding whether or not they are, I was going to say eligible for conception, but in a fertile, right? That sounds like a thesaurus trying to tell you how to conceive. When they're in an optimal fertility mode, what other clues are people's bodies telling them other than recording temperature that this is an optimal time to conceive?
Another really important piece for females to look at is whether or not they're getting kind of a cervical mucus discharge. So when you're ovulating, basically your body wants to try and help the sperm get the sperm to the egg. So you'll notice that your discharge will change to kind of a clear, almost the consistency of egg white, like a stringy type mucus. That can be a good indicator that you are ovulating. That usually will time up around the same time that temperatures are going up. But I mean, with fertility, or, you know, if somebody is trying, I think one of the big things that I talk to my patients about is not even necessarily worrying about timing intercourse with that specific day, but making sure that they're just having sex and enjoying themselves, you know, every, you know, 2, max 3 days. Because if they're doing that, then you're never going to miss that window, because sperm can live for up to 3 days. So, you know, if that's part of your regular routine, that I find takes a lot of the stress away from couples. Because once you get into this, okay, I'm only going to have sex when I'm ovulating so I can get pregnant, it becomes more of a job and quite stressful for couples. I'm sure you probably find that with your patients as well.
Yeah, sometimes I say to them, this should actually be fun, and they look at me like I am crazy.
Yeah.
But this is kind of what life is all about. So, you know, it shouldn't be something that that feels like a chore. It also shouldn't feel, in my opinion, it shouldn't feel hyper-medicalized, unless it is being medicalized.
No.
But we have that tendency to do that. Should women be using ovulation kits? Is that something you advocate, or something you use way down the road? Because I have a lot of women, they're like totally gung-ho, or like, we pulled the goalie and now I'm measuring this and I'm measuring that. And I'm like, are there good things to measure? And then there's their overkill in your perspective?
I do find that, yeah, I mean, things can get overly medicalized. And once, I mean, I think it's useful for someone to know if they are ovulating or not. Because if they're not ovulating, then obviously it's going to be quite problematic for them to get pregnant. So that's where something like the ovulation test strips, or using, you know, something like a gerotherm that looks at basically, you know, whether or not your LH is surging, that doesn't have kind of the same price point associated with it as this test strips, using something that confirms what your can be helpful for some people. But again, it often I find will get people into that, okay, well, I'm ovulating, so you've got to get home right now and we got to make this happen. And then, you know, that can create some performance anxiety and other issues in the bedroom. So I try to, you know, teach people so that they're aware, but then also not be hyper-focused on it.
What's one thing about this whole process of like fertilities and babies that you're like, I just wish everyone knew this?
I don't know that there's one thing that really stands out that way, because I find most people come in at very different places. But I think just keeping them focused on the fun and keeping, you know, the intimacy and the importance of their relationship with one another rather than focused on getting pregnant.
Yeah, I hear you. I want to talk a little bit about the journey of women and embracing our careers and finding this balance and then becoming mothers. And I want to have a straight up question with you. Do you think ambition impacts fertility?
I do think it does to some extent, yes. Because I mean, the number one thing that will determine your egg quality is your age, right? So if your ambition is, you know, having you wait and wait and wait to have children, then yes, I think it can impact your fertility, absolutely. Now, that being said, there's lots of things you can do proactively to maintain, you know, a good level of fertility. But if you decide you're going to be in your career till you're 45 and then start trying to family, is it going to be more challenging for you than at 25? Absolutely. So I think it does play a role. And when you see, you know, companies like, I know Facebook, I don't know if they're still doing it, but for a while they were offering women that, you know, decided they wanted to continue to work to be able to freeze their eggs, and they would pay for it for them. So when you're seeing, you know, a big company like that offering that type of a service, you know, this is, you know, ambition and career is playing a big role in the fertility piece for sure.
I haven't seen that, but I'm sitting here with this like, oh my gosh, smile on my face. Like I just couldn't imagine that being what entices me to work with a company and what their culture must be like.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating. One thing I've seen in my practice, and so just so everyone knows, sometimes I send a few questions to people and then so they have a sense of what I'm going to ask. And I am like completely so off field of what I told Jody I'd be asking her that it's fun for me. But I'm sure on the other end, she's like, where are we going with this next? One thing I have seen in practice is a connection between endometriosis and really ambitious women with a lot on their plate. And I don't know if it's a stress connection. I don't know if it's a mind-body thing. But I haven't talked to any other practitioners about it. Have you seen this, or is this just my practice?
I mean, I would say that there are a lot of women that I see in my practice that do suffer with endometriosis that are career-focused. I don't know that I would have made that connection without you pointing that out. Because, I mean, I do have some patients that, you know, do have endometriosis that aren't necessarily as driven, but I mean, I do think there probably is a piece there for sure.
Yeah, nor am I trying to make sweeping sweeping generalizations at all.
No, no.
I'm always just very fascinated and speak openly with my patients about mind-body connections between some of the conditions that that they see manifesting. And it's just one of the archetypes I've seen with endometriosis.
Yeah, interesting, for sure.
So I know this is an area of passion for you, and you could probably talk about this all day long. You have a big event coming up, which I kind of am enjoying and excited about for two reasons. One, it's related to fertility. And two, I actually am just going to pick your brain for a few minutes about running an event, because I love that as a tool to be able to speak to individuals. Tell us a little bit about what it is that you have going on in the next few weeks.
Yeah, so coming up on April 14th, I'm running the first Canadian fertility show. And so there was kind of a few reasons that I wanted to put a show together like this. One is it's a great opportunity to have both kind of the traditional medical field and the complementary or alternative medical field come together in for patients. So if you go to the website, you can see the list of speakers. There's 18 speakers through the day that range from topics just like you were talking about, mind-body medicine, IVF 101, social egg freezing. Is that something we should talk about? How to optimize sperm and egg health before you want to get pregnant. So there's naturopathic doctors on stage, acupuncturists, medical doctors. And then the other kind of main driving factor behind it is really trying to break the stigma around the conversation with fertility. You know, still a lot of people, I'll find they don't want to even tell some of their family that they've been struggling to get pregnant, or they don't want to talk to their friends, and they're avoiding, you know, families because they can't be around kids. And being able to have those open conversations with people, bringing the fact that one in six couples, you know, maybe is having a concern with fertility to the forefront.
So who should come to this event? Because I know one of your goals is, one, to break stigma, and not for fertility to always be something, or a conversation about fertility to be, oh, we've been trying for a year and now I've got doctors and now I've got all sorts of stuff going on, I'm going to go to the fertility show. Like, I would imagine that your audience is really anyone who's in that sphere of life, not just individuals who are having trouble.
Absolutely. And I mean, I would love to see a lot of, you know, younger women and men coming out to this event, you know, people in their 20s that, you know, maybe think they want to have a family at some point. So, you know, coming and listening to the lectures about, you know, optimizing your diet to keep you fertile, you know, how do we help with egg and sperm health, those kind of things. So that, again, we can set the groundwork early, because, you know, we know the longer you wait and the longer you live kind of a toxic lifestyle, the more difficult it's going to be for you to have a healthy baby. And really, at the end of the day, we want our next generation of kids to be healthier than we are, not sicker.
Yeah, I totally love that. And I really believe that children's health starts preconception. So it's not even what happens while you're pregnant and the avoidance of alcohol or other things. It's actually the stuff you do before you get pregnant. It's amazing for people to have access to this information all under one roof.
Well, thank you.
You mentioned toxicity, and you've mentioned it a few times, and I want to circle back to that a little bit. Are there things that couples should be doing in terms of testing to understand whether or not there's a toxic burden that they should address before they conceive?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, especially for the women's side of things, like looking at toxic metals beforehand. Now, if that's a route you're going to go, that is something, you know, I know you were saying you're working with patients 9-12 months before. You know, those are really good things to be checking before you want to start even considering trying to get pregnant, because also looking at things like your insecticides, pesticides, eating more organic type foods so then you're not putting more toxins into the system are also going to be helpful for just reducing that toxic burden in the body.
In an ideal world, should everyone be eating grass-fed meat and organic vegetables while they're trying to conceive and while they're pregnant?
I mean, what I try and at least start patients with is looking at things like, you know, the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15 in terms of kind of fruit and vegetable content. Because I know it's not realistic for necessarily everybody to eat organic everything all the time. So, you know, if they are going to eat foods on that Dirty Dozen list, those ones I say, yeah, those have to be organic. You know, if those aren't available, then we start looking at those other options. So, you know, the Clean 15 is a list of kind of the most common, fruits and vegetables that don't have the, you know, same amount of insecticides, pesticides, and things like that on them. Genetically modified foods is also something I'll talk to patients about really trying to avoid as much as possible. Just because with those, we really don't know the long-term health implications. So, you know, sticking to foods that were, you know, made in nature is what I will recommend for patients. With meats, yeah, I mean, the more you can, again, get back to how animals were supposed to be raised, I think is going to be good, just not for your own health, but the health of the planet, right? So, I mean, if, again, it's affordable for you and you can make it happen, then I do think it's a better choice, absolutely.
Yeah, GMOs are frightening because I think that a lot of people sometimes think that things are genetically modified to increase the health of the plant or how quickly it can grow. Most plants are actually genetically modified to not die when they are smothered in herbicide. So it's like, I agree with you. It is an absolutely critical thing for people to start to look at the labels on, especially when they are looking to conceive.
Yes, absolutely.
Glyphosate, it's just such an insidious little herbicide. It's awful. And where you can avoid it, it's such a good idea.
Well, and I just actually saw today that Germany is actually now banning glyphosate. So, you know, it's coming that we're looking to reduce it. So it's definitely something that I recommend patients avoid at all costs.
Yeah, I totally agree. And this is the kind of stuff people don't know. And to be honest, like, all due respect to physicians, most physicians aren't sitting there telling you how to avoid glyphosate when you're looking to conceive. And that's what's so amazing about you bringing everybody under one roof for a single event. So we've talked about how to get pregnant. We've talked about toxicity. Can you briefly touch on, Jody, what couples should be looking at in terms of prenatal supplemental support? Recognizing everyone's different and they should be working with an individual practitioner. Are there certain things that people really just need to make sure that they are advised around?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, generally speaking, being on a good quality prenatal vitamin for a female is going to be a great idea preconceptionally. Looking at things like making sure the folic acid in it is, you know, in an active form, the 5-methyl tetrahydrofolate, especially for advanced maternal age. So that would be basically anybody over the age of 35. That's going to be important. Making sure that you're getting enough good quality omega-3 fatty acids in, also I would say is very important just for, you know, placental development, for also then for neuronal development in the baby. So that's a big one. And the other thing that I find not a lot of people will talk about is choline. And choline is very important for baby's development. And a lot of women are deficient in choline. So choline, our biggest source from a food standpoint, will come from eggs. So if a woman is avoiding eggs for whatever reason, they're likely deficient in choline. So making sure their prenatal vitamin has some choline in it is going to be really important.
I could have eaten a dozen eggs a day when I was pregnant. Yeah.
Your body craves it, right?
It was amazing. My husband's like, "What is wrong with you?" I could not get enough. Briefly, can you comment on what you were talking about when you said an activated form of folic acid? Because I think a lot of people are like, I take the prenatal that my doctor recommended, has folate in it, I'm good to go. But maybe we should hold up there, and because there's a lot of new research about this.
Yes, absolutely. So there's a process in your body. It's a detoxification process called methylation. And basically, I mean, it's an 8-step process. One of the steps in that process uses an active form of folate called 5-MTHFR. There's about 15% of the population that basically doesn't have the gene for your body to be able to convert folate into this active form. And oftentimes, like, especially when we're looking in the fertility population, women that have either had, you know, recurrent miscarriages or that are having trouble conceiving often will fall into that, you know, 15% of the population. If you are taking a synthetic folic acid, so if it actually says on your prenatal folic acid instead of folate, that can actually basically block the whole system from working properly. So it is a really important piece when you're looking at your prenatal vitamin.
Yeah, and it is definitely something that I would say most of my patients, unless we've been working together, have overlooked.
Yeah, well, and it's based, I mean, when you look at the kind of common over-the-counter prenatals, most of them have synthetic folic acid in them. So it is something important to look at.
I love this. This is such important stuff. It is the work of legacy, really, like helping women to conceive healthy children. It's amazing. What do you want your legacy to be?
I think if, you know, our future generation can be healthier than our current generation, that would be a huge legacy piece for me. So, you know, educating practitioners, whether they're kind of natural health practitioners or traditional, you know, medical doctors, making sure that this information is getting out so we can make our next generation healthy would be fantastic.
And how do you define health?
I would say, I mean, it definitely is a combination of both your physical, mental, and emotional well-being. All three of those tie together to make someone healthy.
Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. When you know better, you can do better. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/Anthropology quiz. This is a perfect place to segue into the second component of the interview. I call these questions our KPIs or key performance indicators. So these are questions that require a quick response, but they allow us some really unique insight in terms of some of the things that make you tick. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share?
Most mornings, I would say 90% of them, I get up, work out, and then make lunches for the kids, make lunches for myself, breakfast, and then we're out the door.
You make that sound so easy. I feel like there's some things that fall apart between the lunches and the door, but I'll let you keep that. Fiction or nonfiction? Yes.
Maybe some battles with the children in that time frame. Yep, absolutely. But we're out the door by 8 o'clock. Yeah.
Okay, good for you. Because there were like some serious bombs dropping in my house this morning. And I was like, oh. Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
I'll be honest, I don't think I'm reading anything right now. I've been very focused on the fertility show.
Yeah, so fair enough. Fair. I get that, right? There's an ebb and flow. What is the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
I would say exercise.
Yeah, you mentioned that before. I thought you might say that.
Yeah.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I don't know if it's bad, but we... my husband and I got married while we were backpacking after school in South Africa. We gave our families 24 hours notice that we were going to get married, and 8 people flew from, you know, New York, the UK, and Canada to come to it. So that was pretty exciting and fun.
That's amazing. Good for you. I like that. That's totally badass. You get a point there. What do you do for fun or play?
For me, I mean, exercise stuff is definitely my thing. I play on 2 women's soccer teams still. I grew up playing rep soccer, and so that's a huge passion for me.
And last question for you, Dr. Peacock. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I feel like we're maybe born that way. I mean, I think you can certainly learn some skills, but I do think it has to be somewhat innate in you to want to take risks and put yourself out there like that. And it's not for everyone. Absolutely not.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you on that. It is definitely not for everyone, but we're super glad that it is for you. I know people are going to want to follow up with you related to the fertility show. Where can they learn more? And we'll link them up in our show notes.
Yeah, that's perfect. The website's CanadianFertilityShow.ca. And then we also have an app that you can download. It's the Canadian Fertility Show 2018 or CFS 2018. And that gives you a list of all the exhibitors, sponsors, and speakers for the day.
That's amazing. The show is super accessible in terms of a price point. I'm so excited that you are doing this. We'll make sure everyone is linked up. Jody, thanks so much for your time. It was amazing having you today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.